Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials. Order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's November the 3rd, 2023, and this is episode number 9. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about Kyle driving the Tesla Model 3 Highland Refresh, the reveal of the Volkswagen ID.7 Tour, Chevy Equinox EV getting priced higher than its original target, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Yoni, host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. Joining us today is the congenial Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. And we also have the manly Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast.
If only.
Which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Autospec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. Hey there, everybody. Good to see you all.
Hello.
So, hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Before we get going, I just want to point out, I don't know if the followers saw our midweek interview with John McElroy last week, but on the UAW strike. If you haven't, check that out after the show, because I think he's such a pro. And that was a really good interview. So if you guys haven't seen that, check it out.
Yeah, lots of great insights there from John McElroy on that. I pronounced his name wrong at the very beginning. It's so embarrassing. I'm sorry. I just hope I never run into Marcus Brownlee anywhere.
Me and Marquise are cool.
Inside joke. Anyway, so this week, I don't think we have a EV News Daily weekly reporting roundup for you.
It's such a stupid reason as well. Our clocks changed last week. I think yours changed this weekend. And I was working this morning and I thought, great, this is the hour. It takes me an hour to make that, to research and record and add all the sort of cutaway shots. And I was like, oh, no, we're going live. So stupid reason, I can't tell the time.
So is that why it's still dark there in your little office?
Yeah, I don't know what's happened. One of my lights has gone off as well. Oh. It's like the whole thing is just falling apart.
You're having a lot of malfunctions in that studio recently, Martin. You know, your window shade fell down. Now the light bulb's working. I mean, we got to get you a raise or something. You need to put some money into that office over there and step it up a bit.
It's not as it seems. I think I showed. We did a chat the other night, and I was on the phone with Kyle. And he was like, show me behind the camera. And I spun the camera around and it's like, this is just chaos. It's like, it's a storeroom. This all looks quite, you know, there's lights. And
someone's
like,
posh.
No. You look behind the camera and it's you work out why it's falling apart.
Hey, so I'm a little curious. Kyle, where are you this morning?
I am in beautiful Utah.
Okay, because you get that beautiful Utah sunset coming up behind you.
Sunrise,
right. Sunrise, yes. Coming up. Nice
early. Yeah, at the Richfield, Utah Supercharger. There's a hotel here. So we're driving back from Las Vegas, from SEMA to Colorado. And I'm actually, as soon as I get there, I'm switching cars, jumping in the Rivian and driving to the East Coast. because we have a whole bunch of programs coming up, cool stuff this week, excited to share with everyone. But yeah, so I was just, you know, this was as far as we could make it to. It's me, Drew, and Alyssa all cruising in the Model S. So we're like, okay, multiple rooms, got the supercharger here. This is where we'll stay for the night. Perfect.
Sounds great. So do you want to talk about SEMA, or are you at it? Because I haven't seen any SEMA content on your YouTube channel. I've seen a bit on Twitter and stuff. Do you want to talk about some of the
things? Well, it's coming through YouTube. Certainly on its way, uploading as we do this podcast. So yeah, a bunch of stuff. SEMA, of course, is for those of you who don't know, it is definitely the largest auto show of the year for the aftermarket. It's sort of turning into a little bit of a lifestyle event for vehicles. It encompasses all areas of cars, which I enjoy. They have lifted pavement princess bro trucks, which are like, okay, that's what people think. That's what I think of when I think of SEMA. That's like actually not the largest portion of the show. There's true hardcore off-roading and overlanding. There's sports cars and hypercars. Some of the craziest vehicles on the planet. There's an electric section now with tons of modified electric cars and also a ton of conversions of either classic or modern vehicles converted to electric. And, you know, SEMA's just exploding. There were so many people. I mean, you could barely move around, and it's absolutely insane. And it represents the detailing community, the home workshop community. There's vehicle, you know, service center stuff, equipment. And then there's another show tangent to SEMA, which I also attended, called Apex, which is like an in-industry show. And it's a lot of suppliers, really small suppliers, meeting with larger suppliers, meeting with automakers, and just a whole craziness going on in Las Vegas this week. So I flew from, last I saw you was in Germany on my way to go drive the new Model 3. Mm-hmm. And I flew from there after that to Colorado, road trip the Model S to Vegas. We're on the return, and then I'm heading to the East Coast. So super great and just crazy. Yeah, like this Jeep had a Jeep. it's a Jeep squared. I mean, it was just crazy. I mean,
your
this
dog,
is
I heard you like Jeeps.
Yeah, yeah.
give you a Jeep on your Jeep.
Yeah, it was insane. And this, obviously, like, there were even crazier stuff than this. So really just insane. What I focused on, I made a whole almost 50-minute video, not unusual for us, about the EV conversion industry. We went through the major players in the industry. My friend Jerome Andre, who runs a great, actually physical magazine and online website called EV Builder's Guide, was really the only media covering the conversion space. And he's like, Kyle, and he's a viewer. We've been friends for a while. He's like, you really got to film. You got to cover this. You got to see what everyone's up to. And it's next level.
That's very cool. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, go ahead.
So, yeah, EV conversions, that's pretty good. I used to follow that really closely for a while, but it's, you know, just dropped off, like, with And you used to follow EVTV as well for a while. I mean, that's what they did. They really concentrated on conversions. A lot of, you know, Volkswagen-based vehicles, but now, what kind of, you didn't see a whole lot of Volkswagen stuff there, or was it kind of expanding it out in there to...
Oh yeah. I mean, a couple of buses that people had converted. Sure. You'll always see those. They're just easy. They're space. There was a vehicle that wasn't really known for its combustion engine. So it's not like sacrilege to convert them. You know, it's just one of those things you can do. But yeah, there were crazy builds all the way to a completely bespoke Ferrari Testarossa that was sort of upgraded and modified with a central seating position that was, you know, had an 85 kilowatt hour battery pack and 400 horsepower. And it just like totally modernized, really cool. And the cool part about that was it was from a whole bunch of crashed cars that would have never made it back on the road. So it wasn't like they were chopping up a functional vehicle. This was, you know, they were actually stunt cars from a movie that were just rusting away. Nice. And that was done by Gas Monkey Garage. Richard, who's the guy who owns it, really famous guy in the car world, getting into EV. I really loved to see that. There was a Mercedes. I don't really like replicas personally, but there was a Model 3 chassis that looked like a Mercedes 300 SL. It was a fiberglass body, but it literally had, like, everything was a Tesla. It had autopilot still working. It had supercharging still working. It was insane. And it, you know, there's nothing that looks like a Tesla in that car. So that'll be in the video that goes up today. And I think everyone will really enjoy this one because Jerome is so knowledgeable. He knows about legacy EV and all of these other major players. And we talk about who's doing what, who's legit, what's the safety of this? How did builds happen? Really, really nice overview. I hope everyone enjoys it.
Yeah, I'm going to enjoy that. I'm looking forward to that. That's good. When does it come out?
Yeah, it's uploading. It has, hold on.
Today, probably.
39 minutes left on the upload.
Okay. Damn. All right. Hey, Martin, can you bring up a picture of that Mustang and Kyle's feed?
Yes, I will. Let me find that.
Because that's one of the vehicles that you have like a few pictures of that's kind of like a OEM spec. So you have this crazy Mustang Mach-E. And it kind of puts like the Mach-E Rally, the official Ford Mach-E Rally, to shame because it's like next level off-roading looking beast. Look at this thing. If we move along to the front, so you got big hooks on the front, big tow hooks on the front, and you got your big electric bike rack on the back and all kinds of fancy little add-ons. But the frunk is where the action is. Check out this frunk. Big old winch inside the frunk that feeds through the front of the car. That's like amazing. That's like, I've never seen anything quite like that. And the frunk doesn't, I mean, the Mustang Mach-E doesn't usually, I mean, the frunk space in there, and also headlights along the front. I love those, the round headlights integrated into the hood. That's nice. Yeah. Can you tell us about this car, Kyle?
Yeah, well, I think Ford needs a lot of credit for honestly getting a larger audience into electric vehicles and doing it in a cool way. This is something that I believe a company called Chin, T-J-I-N, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, produced, and it was at the official Ford booth. But you have to give Ford props for saying, okay, we are fully embracing electric. That brand from all of the existing automakers went headfirst beyond anyone else. And they're trying to make EVs cool. They've always done these sort of one-off EV projects, whether it's the Cobra Jet crazy situation or the Mach-E 1400 drift car or the super van that's fully electric that ran at Pikes Peak. And now you see them having a display of this sort of Baja-inspired Mach-E way beyond what they could sell in a series production rally version. Just shows how cool that company is, in my impression, that they're willing to showcase EVs. It was really the talk of everyone at SEMA being like, oh, no, like, I mean, they had crazy, you know, they have a factory 800 horsepower new Mustang that's just insane with the warranty and all that. You know, they had that in a different area. But this was the only automaker representing with electric vehicles that I could tell.
Really?
So you have to give them huge props for it. And yeah, SEMA's not really like a real EV thing yet. I mean, it's still kind of taboo. They have the Boring Company tunnel with all the Teslas running. And that was pretty much standing in line and talking to everyone, like everyone's first ride in an EV, if you will. Like a lot of people were just getting exposed to it.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's a lot. It was really cool. And so huge props to Ford. The car was insane. Cool suspension, cool wide body, cool accessories. And it just makes me want one so bad. I'm like, I would daily that. That would be amazing.
So that was the actual Ford, kind of project then?
I don't know. I don't know the story. I didn't actually talk to anyone about it. Sounds like a separate company created it for Ford or something.
Gotcha.
Yeah, not sure.
I did see the official Ford van in the background there.
Yeah, it was at the official Ford booth.
Okay, right on. Yeah, so it's got their blessings or whatever then. Part of their deal. Right on. So just before you got the SEMA, are we done with SEMA? Is there anything else there you wanted to mention?
Just tons of modified Teslas, of course, as you can imagine, either going up or down in terms of suspension and craziness. And I mean, some of these people have put $100,000, $200,000 into their Model 3s, just making them crazy. So, I mean, it's certainly interesting for me to look at. I'm always like a performance guy. So I'm like, does that actually go faster around the track? But, as long as people are into their cars and having fun, I totally support it.
This is not an event open to the public. I'm not sure where am I going with this.
It is open. Like anyone can just like, just make something up and buy a ticket. Yeah.
Okay.
They're in the business to sell tickets.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would think. And it's got all this thing. Like I can imagine a lot of people would just love seeing all that blingy stuff in person, you know.
That was pretty much everyone. I mean, it did not feel like an industry show to me. This was everyone just looking at everything else.
Okay, because I've never done SEMA. SEMA is like one of those. It's like this big event where, like, traditional automotive journalists, like they get the invite to, they get the assignments to go to SEMA, and they're like, no, no.
Yeah, everyone, because like, journalists don't understand this side of car culture in general.
Right. Or they don't, or maybe just they don't appreciate it. Like, you know,
I don't. Everyone that I know that wants to go can go. Like, whether they just, you know, like if you wanted to go, you'd say, you know, Dude Incorporated is my company. Sure, and, yeah. And, you know, and you could buy a ticket and go. So it's, you know, I don't know. It might be one of those things where they say it's an industry thing, but really, in reality, all you have to do is fill an application, buy a ticket, and you can get in.
Right. So Maki Vlog helping us out with some details here. So Jin created other special Makis for Ford. Google TJIN Maki. Ford sponsors the projects. Cool. Thank you. So before you got to SEMA this week, Kyle, you were in Europe last week driving a BMW iX on the Autobahn, which sounds pretty cool. What was even cooler, though, is that you got to spend some quality time with the Tesla Model 3 Highland Refresh. So, of course, we want to hear your thoughts about the driving experience, and I hope we can get some questions from the audience as well. But first, maybe give us a little bit of background, like whose car was it, and where did you drive it, and how did it feel to be a passenger on the Nürburgring? Oops, spoiler alert.
Yeah, well, videos are live, so not much of a spoiler, but yep. First on the iX topic, that was a car we rented from Sixt, which has like gone hardcore into EVs. They like are all in. So it was cool. They make a lot of, I think I mentioned it in the last podcast, but they're buying their cars based off of our reviews, which I thought was really cool. So I was like, okay, well, let's, you know, everything should be a Taycan Turbo S. anyway, really fun. So the iX was awesome. I think I did 3,000 kilometers in that car over a week. And like for 3 days, it was just parked while I was at an event. So just huge miles, lots of distance, just sitting at top speed a lot of the time, and so much fun. Really enjoyed it.
Isn't it a great vehicle for long distance driving? I mean, to me, at least it was in my times that I've driven in. I just so comfortable, so quiet, such a pleasant vehicle to drive in. So, I mean,
yeah, you know, the iX is envious. Yeah, if you're going to choose an SUV to do big distances, that's pretty good. The only downside is the charging speed is kind of just, it's got a big battery and it peaks at like 195 kilowatts. And it's like, okay, come on, let's charge a little faster here. But most of the time I was filming at charging stations. I was stopping at all the cool ones. So it didn't hold me up much at all. The thermal capacity of the car was really the weakest link in Germany. It just kept overheating all the time. And so that was my main issue, was just battling the thermals of the iX. It never happened to me in the US, because when you just cruise normally on the highways, it's no problem. But if you whack it at 150, 155 miles an hour, yeah, things get hot pretty quick in that one, more than other EVs. So I went to where I left you last, was in that car doing a podcast from the Seat and Greet in Hilden. I drove to Amsterdam that evening and saw a Tesla Model 3 Highland. And what's cool is this is actually a development vehicle for our friends at Enhance Auto. It's, I think, a collaboration between Enhance Auto and AA Wireless, which are like the wireless Android Auto guys. They make the stuff. And so I'm not 100% sure how that relationship works, but both of them are involved, and they said, just link us when you post about it. So that's what I'm doing. And so the Enhanced Auto guys are super cool. They make the sexy buttons to do a whole bunch of stuff in the car. You can use Scan My Tesla with their stuff and turn down regen or turn off traction control or enable manual battery preconditioning or cooling. Lots of, additional control over the vehicle with their hardware and software packages.
So these are just like stick-on buttons that you can put anywhere in your car that kind of react. The car kind of can get instructions from, basically, and do, you know, give you new functionality around your cabin, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And they also have an app. So if you don't want buttons, I mean, I actually have them in my Model 3. I have them to turn on track mode. So rather than going through the menu and settings to get into track mode, I can just boop, track mode on, into drive and go. Nice. And so, yeah, really cool. And they're also developing the stock retrofit kit for Model S and the Highland cars. So you'll have turn signals and the gear selector and all that stuff. Right. So really looking forward to that. The car is, a summary, because I've already done enough videos on it. If you really are curious about the car, there's 3 large YouTube videos on the car right now. There is a full build quality analysis on out-of-spec detailing, which has just skyrocketed in views for our small detailing channel. So thanks to everyone who watched that. There is the main driving review on Out of Spec Reviews, which was the best performing Out of Spec video ever in history at launch. So we're so excited about that. Thanks to everyone who watched it. I think it did 100,000 views in 7 hours, which is big for us. So we're really pleased with that one. And then there's the Nürburgring lap that we did with Misha on Misha's channel. So if you type in Tesla Model 3 Misha, you'll see you know, us ripping around the Nürburgring in that video. So there, we really covered the car from daily usable to highway to performance driving to fit and finish. The only thing that we left on the table was efficiency testing. And okay. I tried. I have an efficiency testing video that I'll probably upload this weekend, but it was raining. And there were no dry roads when I had this car.
Right. Yeah. The rain really takes a chunk out of your efficiency when you're driving. I noticed that on my road trip, like especially it was like the really you can see the difference because you're looking at the water hours per mile as you're driving rain and all of a sudden that shoots up.
Of course. Yeah. You're just adding so much resistance. It's nothing new for EVs. We've known this, but it's just, it's not great for efficiency testing. Because what I was going to do was I was going to rent from Sixt a Model 3 rear wheel drive. And run them side by side, both, same spec to same spec. But we could have done that in the rain. It was just really tight timing. We had to get to Germany. We had to get the other videos filmed. And honestly, I did also some point of view driving stuff that will go up on some of our other channels. Like I didn't sleep when I had this car. I was just filming the whole time and then jumped on a plane. So I think I did as much as I could do.
So Learning Fast has a question here. Do you think the 125 mile an hour speed limit on Highland is from the suspension or the tires? None of the tires that Tesla uses are rated under 149 miles an hour. So why is the limit 125 miles an hour?
Yeah, actually, I have the similar thought. If you guys watch the video, you'll notice I mentioned the car just is tuned wonderfully for daily driving. I did a whole podcast just on the suspension on the Out of Spec podcast channel. And really shared my deep thoughts on the frequency response damper and how it's all aligned and how it feels. And then I think it's the better compromise to take because any, engineering decision in a car is a compromise. I think this really was perfect for the way that it was or for the intended use of the vehicle. You give up performance handling with the new suspension. And, you know, on the Nürburgring with Misha, we had no grip, really low speed. So it really didn't get a chance to get a lot of G on the car, a lot of force through the vehicle. I think it was good that it was raining because the car would have probably performed worse if it was dry. It wouldn't really feel that slop in the suspension. And just right. cruising down the highway in the car on the Autobahn just felt a little bit unstable at top speed in the corner straight away, just fine. But that's the thing. Who's really doing that? No one. And so I think they limited the top speed for safety, efficiency, suspension. I can't imagine it's tire. that to me seems like the last on the list. Tesla said they limited it because of the tires. So it could just be that. But I agree. I believe the tires are rated for 150 miles an hour.
Going from the traditional or the Tesla Model 3 that we've had for the last 5 or so years, what's the differences right away? But the seat's more comfortable is one thing, I guess. Even more like
yeah. Well, there's been many generations of existing Model 3 seats. Even though they all appear to look the same, they've all been slightly different. The ones that I have in my Model 3 now are perfection. To me, that is the perfect seat. If I get into a newer Model 3, doesn't fit me so well. Just little things that they change. And so, I really enjoyed the new seats in the car. No issues there. I love that they're ventilated. That is such a nice thing. And it seems like the air pickup for the ventilation is right near an air conditioning output vent. So it's actually freezing cold air that comes up, which is really, really nice. So love that. And just like the whole car has grown up. It's so much quieter than, it's not quieter than an iX or an i7. Okay. Right, right. It's so much quieter than the old Model 3 where it's now totally acceptable. It rides so much better. The interior feels all these little changes of the materials, the sound system, all these little things just really add up to a much more nicely, tuned package, if you will. And it's the Model 3 grown up. That's how I summed it up in the video. And certainly for a lot of people, they're going to want a hatchback. They're going to want an SUV, blah, 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 blah. But when you factor in everything a car has to do for the price, and I would say the ease of daily usability of this car. It is the best car. I said it when I reviewed it the first time. Yeah. Driving it only reaffirmed that sentiment, which is it's not the best car for everyone. But as an average, when I look at all the cars that I test, there's no major downsides here. That car, it now rides great for the cruising. It's amazing in the city. Great drivetrain control. Great charging network here in the U.S. already functional with. It's the car.
Kyle, let me ask you a question. I'm concerned that because it doesn't have the stalks, it's going to turn off some like first time EV buyers that are, you know, it's in a much lower price point than say Model S and Model X, you know, and it's kind of like Tesla's every man's car, at least right now. You know, I know it's still maybe priced higher than what a lot of people can afford, but it's like their mass produced EV, that and the Y. I'm concerned that first-time buyers that are looking at EVs that say, well, Tesla's been doing this longer than anybody. They got this network. This is the car for me to buy. Are going to look at that and be like, that's too much for me. I'm already have to adjust to the fact that, you know, this. I have to figure out this charging thing. But now I don't get my stalks that I'm used to. I'm afraid I'm going to have an accident. What do you think about that? Now, and try to have a point of view of not Kyle Connor, who knows everything about cars and adapts quickly, like the first time buyer that, you know, is concerned. Do you think that's going to be a pain point for people?
Oh, well, my car now, my Model S, doesn't have stocks. And that's right. The thing I hate about the car the most. It sucks. No, I agree. It's terrible. Yeah. At what degree people will value that, I'm not. That's up to them. Certainly, it's not going to help people buy the car. No one's going to say, oh, there's no stocks.
That's the thing. I think people are going to walk away from it and say, no, I can't. You know, I need a stock, you know.
Then go get a car with stocks. Like, yeah, great. They make those. But they'll also, like, the guys that we borrowed the car from are making a retrofit. Now, should you have to retrofit your car so you can live with it, at least many people will do it. I will do it because, you know, it's a pain. To me, the turn signals aren't as big of a deal as the gear selector, actually. Yeah, I just hate reaching over to the screen. Now, yes, it will automatically go into gear, but you always have to look at it to make sure you went to the right one. Mm-hmm. So it's something you got to think about. And it only does it when your seatbelt's on. And I wear my seatbelt always, but sometimes I get in my car and I like to just hit drive, get rolling. And as I'm pulling out of the driveway, I'm putting the seatbelt on. This one, it's like sit in the car, buckle up, then turn the car on. And then you have to lift your foot off the brake again and touch it again for it to go into gear. That's so it's like multiple steps to do the gear, you know, selection for direction. For example, in my Rivian, as I'm getting in, I can hit the brake pedal. The truck is on. I'm in drive before my butt even hits the seat, and I'm moving as I'm shutting the door, and then the seatbelt comes on. And that's a luxurious feature. So you can't do that with the new car.
Interesting. So you also said it handles a little differently, like besides the suspension, but just like the turn in and everything. How'd you find that?
Yeah, I mean, it was really wet, so it was hard to really, you know, do that. But yeah, definitely. I mean, the suspension's different. The steering feels slightly different. And that could just be a byproduct of the suspension being different. But normally in old Model 3, it's two turns lock to lock. This is like two and an eighth. So there's definitely something going on with the steering situation. It seems a little bit less twitchy on center tip-in. It could also just be the design of the new wheel. I mean, when you start adding all of these new changes, it's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is sometimes. Either way, the car just feels way more grown up. In my impression, if you don't need a hatchback or the cargo space of the Model S, don't buy a Model S, buy a Model 3. Like, it's that good. True.
Yeah. I don't know why people would buy a Model S when you get a Model 3. Just, you know, it's just tighter and easier to drive, easier to park.
Absolutely. Yeah. Model S, like from my experience with mine, I love the drivetrain. I love the Plaid stuff because it's insane. But like everything else about the car, I'm like, I kind of wish I could just put this drivetrain in my Model 3.
Yeah. I mean, this is a big car, which is great for some things, but
lots of rattles, lots of creaks. Doesn't really feel like it's built that well. Model 3 felt great. Model 3 is totally dialed.
So no word about how the Model 3 is built, right? Like gigacasting wise, is that three sections like the Austin Gigafactory Model 3?
Yeah, we're not 100. Well, Austin builds Model Y. Hard to see with all the plastics on the car and everything from my perspective. I was trying to get up underneath there. Let's wait for Monroe to get one, and we'll let them do the their teardowns and everything.
Right. I was looking at the media site from Tesla, and they have like new photos of the Model 3 Highland up there, and they have like a one photo of just like the skeleton of it, and I was trying to see. It looked to me like it's a giga casting. Like there's a lot of cast stuff going on there. There's like not a whole lot of little tiny patched pieces, welds that you knew you'd have to do traditionally, but yeah. That's that, and I have it. I'm looking at it now on my screen.
But it's not going to affect the end user experience of the car. That's the thing. Like when you drive a car, you're not thinking, "Oh, how is this put together?" You're like, "I paid money for a car. It drives, and it drives like this."
Right. Well, it might have fewer squeaks and all that kind of stuff. Right.
Is what I'm. I don't think so. Most of the squeaks and rattles in Teslas come from trim pieces on the interior, in my experience. Yeah, upper control arms, but all those ancillary components are all. Yeah, I don't think you're going to have an NVH benefit from a squeak and rattle perspective. Perhaps there's, you know, like harmonic benefits for doing something like this, or actually non-benefits because you don't have isolation in between certain metals. It might actually be louder when you do a single casting, would be true. My guess. But yeah, now we're getting into nerd stuff that I don't understand. I don't know that world at all, sadly.
All right. See, any other questions? Martin, you have any Model 3 refresh questions?
I'm interested to see how many people change their Model 3 for the new Model 3. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see how many people's first Tesla is that Model 3. Because I see people in the comments saying that the Storks isn't a big deal. Here in the UK, we have roundabouts everywhere. And so if I'm coming up to, and it's just different road layouts, but we have a lot of roundabouts. And if I'm coming up to one and I want to take the fourth, I'm turning right, so I'm taking the fourth exit, I'm going to signal right to let the people around me know I'm going around the roundabout. And that person, all the cars around me know my movements. And then when I've passed the first, second exit and I'm taking the third exit to go right, I'm then going to change the indicator to say I'm now exiting this roundabout and I'm going off. So you've got two options. So your wheel is at a funny angle and you're not looking at the road to signal to fellow road users, I'm now leaving the roundabout, as you have to do. Or you feel your way around, and muscle memory might fix that. It might be fine. I've not driven a no-stalk Tesla. Or you just don't bother, in which case you suck as a driver because that doesn't make roundabouts efficient. So when you can see someone's coming around, but they're indicating to leave at that one, and you can tell the movement of the car, you generally go. And the flow of traffic is very good. I wouldn't spend my own money on that. That's no disrespect to anyone who buys the Highland in the UK and loves it and gets on really well with it. And there are left-hand drive Model S's here as well that have been imported. You can't buy one through Tesla UK. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how many people here, a specific market, you know, right-hand drive, lots of roundabouts, do it and do it through gritted teeth, do it and say it's no problem, or just don't buy. I wouldn't buy the car without the indicator stalk because it's a faff. And as Kyle says, micro annoyances, I think, add up to quite a lot. And it is like first world problems, isn't it? But I, you know, if you can remove as many of those micro annoyances in life, you know, it's just like, you know, I don't know, when you turn your TV on and then you get the logo of the TV and then it starts booting up and you're like, come on, just, you know what I mean? It's like 4 seconds of your life doesn't matter. Right. But it's if it was a micro annoyance every time I drove the car, like, oh, and a micro annoyance with the MG that we still own is that some of the time I'll put my foot on the brake pedal, put it into reverse and it won't release the auto handbrake. And I'm like, so you just reach down and you just push the button and it lets off the auto handbrake and it's fine. No one died. It was a second of my life. But the fact that it's inconsistent annoys the crap out of me. I mean, you know, make of that what you will. But I wouldn't spend my own money on a stalkless Model 3. So yeah, watching it really closely, looking at used prices of Model 3s, I believe over the last 1 or 2 weeks, I've seen some price reductions. And that's not, I've not been following specific cars that haven't sold that have had price reductions. I believe around, you know, £1,000 or £2,000 coming off those newer cars. I think if you're selling a 3-year-old Tesla, you're probably fine in the UK. I think if you have one that's maybe a year or 18 months old and you're changing it for a Highland, I think you've probably lost a bit more money in the last couple of weeks on your used prices on that. Big ships arriving before Christmas here in the UK. I don't think anyone's actually got delivery of theirs. Correct me in the comments if I'm wrong.
Right. I see the Highland. Someone's asking, when is the Highland coming to the US? I almost think it's not going to come here until they can build it here at Fremont. I kind of think that's what's going on, because it's everywhere else, you know, because there's a big tariff from goods from China in the US. So I see the Highland 3 on websites all around. Australia has it, you know, the Asian sites have it. Of course, Europe has it. The UK has it. US, nothing. Canada, I think nothing. So my point, so I'm not sure when it's going to come, except it might be deep into 2024. I don't know. And then someone was also asking about performance. We don't know anything about the performance version of it yet, but we're hoping it has a firmer suspension, or at least I'm hoping it has firmer suspension. That's basically all it needs, right? And of course, the extra power that the performance usually has, right, Kyle?
I mean, it's going to need a lot of stuff. Seats, I think, would be an interesting upgrade. You know, brake package. Traditionally, they always upgrade the brakes on the Performance 3 and Y, or at least maybe the 3, the Y, I don't know. But yeah, both of them, at least in theory, yes. Yeah, there's just a lot of adaptations needed. And I think they need to go more hardcore than the current Model 3 Performance. I see a lot of people buying Model 3 Performances as daily drivers, which is fine, but the dual motors fine at that anyway. So make the Performance like a real M3 competitor, you know, something hardcore. Make it feel special, make it a little bit wild. And yeah, I hope that's what they do.
Quick question for you guys. Do you think the delaying of Highland, because the car is ready, like it, you know, it's ready to go, then they have to make it in Shanghai. It'll be rolling out of Fremont whenever they can. Do you think it's anything to do with the January 1st change of the federal tax credit being you can change it from yourself to your dealer? And Tesla will be registered as a dealer, obviously, with the IRS. Do you think it's anything to do with that hard date? Do you think they're not trying to kind of kill the last chance of selling this last few? Or is it removed from that?
I don't think Tesla is making a decision based off of that for over their entire factory. I don't get the impression they do. That would not be my guess.
Right. All right. Want to move on, I guess? Let's move on. So while Kyle was in Germany driving cool stuff, Jordan, from Out of Spec, was on a Honda Moto Compacto program, and he made a great video about that, and you can find it on the Out of Spec Reviews channel. So just go check that out when you get a chance. We have it here on the screen right now. If you're watching this on video on YouTube or Facebook or Twitch or Twitter, X. I don't know. Kyle, have you had a chance to look at this video?
Oh, of course.
Okay. So I thought he did a great job, because he shows the old Moto Compacto. It even goes and visits somebody with an old Moto Compacto, lifts it up. I don't know if he actually rode it for real. But
no, it didn't function, the old one.
Right. But he got, you know, folded down, and it was interesting that some of the things, the way it folded, it were, you know, replicated sort of on this new one. It's got the little Moto Compacto on the keychain. Oh, actually, I have this from the Tokyo Motor Show in 2019. It can't really see. I've never really opened it, but inside there's like a little tiny plastic Moto.
Uh-huh, cool. That's awesome.
Thing from a vending machine in the convention center. It was awesome. I'm just holding on to that for whatever stupid reason. But yeah, so $1,000, $995. If you take the part number and do a web search on it, you can find some places or sell. I found it in a couple places at a discount, like almost $100 off. So it can apparently could be purchased through there, you know, as well. They were like Honda parts dealers or something. So it's kind of odd, but it could possibly save you $100. I don't know. But yeah, that's about it for that. Tom, should anyone buy the Electron V-Box 48-amp EV charger?
So before we jump into that really quick, we did have a comment about Electron.
Okay.
And electrified light vehicles asked, what's Tom's view on Electron's Vortex adapter? That's their new CCS Tesla NACS adapter that Electron's actually selling now. So Electron actually reached out to me and asked me if I would like one to review and kind of do what I did with the A to Z adapter. They offered one of their executives for me to interview them. So I agreed to do it. And it just so happened that I was doing the V-Box review at that time. They sent me this V-Box months ago, but I have so many EVSC here in the garage, it takes me a while to get to them. And I can't comment yet on that, on the Vortex adapter. But what I will say is I wouldn't rush out to buy it. You can't use it yet. So let's wait until all of the adapters are out on the market before you buy one. Don't rush out and buy any adapter yet, because we all know Tesla's making their own adapter. So you may want the official Tesla one. And there's going to be a bunch of companies, including A to Z, including Electron, and there's other companies making them also. So my advice is do not buy one yet. Wait until we're getting close to them, you being able to use them, and then you'll know what they're all on the market. And then there'll be people like me and other people, Kyle, and other people that have gotten them, that use them, that said, I like this one because of this, and you'll see different specs. And I kind of really don't like the fact that Electron's selling it now when nobody can use it. I wouldn't have taken that strategy. I would have done something more along the lines of what A to Z did and said, look, coming soon, we're not going to sell this until you can actually use it, or very shortly before you can use it. And we're going to try to work with all the manufacturers to try to get them to officially endorse this adapter. I don't know if Electron's doing that. I'm going to talk to them about that. So from that, we'll jump into the review.
Yeah, so this one, I got on screen, right? It's this one.
Yeah. If you're watching this online, I have some concerns about it so far, but I'm not going to comment on that until I really get a look at it and get a hold of it. And I will say one thing that I have noticed about Electron, and I do like Electron's products. Some of their products are good, but they also, one thing I've noticed about Electron, they do rush to try to be first to market with a lot of things. And they sent me their first level 2 wall-mounted charger that they made last year. And when I got it, when I started the review, I contacted them and said, I just want to let you know, if I continue with this review, it's going to be really bad. Do you want me to continue with this review or not? Because I don't want to waste my time on it. I'm going to tell people, run as fast as you can from this review. I'd rather just put it back in a box and send it back to you. And they said, yeah, please do that. So that's why I never reviewed their first charger. And they said, well, this is only like a temporary one. We're already engineering a better one, and we're going to be selling that soon. So I said, okay, when you make that one, send it to me. I don't even really want to review this because it's unsafe and it's not made well. So they sent me the V-Box and I got it. And I just completed the review. You can see it on the wall behind me. That just went up on my channel. And not a bad unit. It's got a lot of good features. But there were things that I didn't like about it. I think the overall construction is a step down from most of the chargers that we have as far as strength-wise. I will say during my extreme heat test, the plastic cover on the front is warped now. Now, yeah, I heat these things up a lot, and the front of the cover got to over 170 degrees. And you'll say, well, that's never going to happen in real life. Well, it will. If you live in, say, Arizona or one of the areas, and this is mounted outside, and it's in direct sunlight, and it's 110 degrees out, and the thing is delivering 40 amps for 3 or 4 hours straight, you could bet your ass that box is going to get up over 150 degrees. And you know, that happens. And you can almost see, you see how it's warped, like the lights from this point, the whole front plastic cover started to warp as I was, as it was getting really hot. So, but I like, there's a lot of things I like about it. You could see from this view here on the side, there's a, an on off button. I kind of like when the units have those. It's got a really nice display screen. It's not a smart charger. And here's another thing that I don't like. It's a 48 amp charger that comes out of the box set to deliver 48 amps, but it also comes with a NEMA 1450 plug attached, and you can't deliver 48 amps through that plug. So in my opinion, if it comes with the NEMA 1450 pigtail on it, it should be set from the factory to deliver 40 amps, not 48. And if you want to hardwire, remove the plug, then you go in and change it to 48. So people that don't understand this are going to buy the thing, hang it up on the wall and plug it in. And mm-hmm. it's going to be ready to deliver 48 amps. And if your car requests it, it's going to pull it. So, so that's an issue. You know, it just, there's some misses here in my point of view. The cable did surprisingly well in my cable deep freeze test. And out of the box, I thought it was going to be bad because it felt like a stiff plasticky cable. Usually the rubberized cables that feel rubberized do well. But yeah, that's, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see this is the cold weather cable test. And for a big, thick cable, see how I'm bending it pretty easily? I usually can't do that with some of the thick cables that feel like they have like a plastic jacket. So it did well in that. There's a lot of things it did well with. But I think the overall construction could be a little better, and they could have a better connector. Talking of which, well, I'm going to grab the connector to let you know what I'm talking about. So this is one of the things I nerd out on. The locking mechanism on connectors is a weak point on connectors. So what I like to see is this to be very strongly made and even protected. As you can see here, the end really hangs out more than some of the other connector locks. So this is not protected here. That's number one. Number two, this is how you unlock the connector from the vehicle. This whole tab here should be made very strongly because that's what breaks when you drop it or just from use. Look at this. I don't know if you could see that I can bend both ends at the same, or let me push this down and now watch. Look, I shouldn't be able to do that. This piece here should be made very strongly, preferably out of metal. And be made strongly. The fact that it's kind of flimsy like this, you can see I could hold one end down and press. I shouldn't be able to do that. So I don't like that. And these are the real nerdy things that 99% of the people wouldn't pick up on, and they'd buy it. And I know I've mentioned this before. I shouldn't worry about other people's reviews, but a lot of influencers get these. Like companies will give them to anybody. You know, Kyle could have as many chargers as I have here if he wanted to. And they review it and they're like, oh, this is fantastic. Look at this thing. Look at the connectors. Feels like it's well made, blah, blah. And I'm like, I just want to comment on their things. Like, you really just did this just to get a free charger. And you know, people buy them off of that. I digress. Yeah, I shouldn't worry about that.
I should talk about that for a second, just with cars as well. There's always a difference between a paid advertisement and an actual review. And it's up. You really should only watch people who make that very clear.
And they don't make it clear, Kyle. Yeah. You know, like they get them. They do say, you know, I did get this for review, but like.
Well, it can't be a paid review. Yeah. That doesn't exist in my mind. There's no such thing as a paid. Those can't go next to each other. It's a paid advertisement or a uninfluenced review. We advertise level 2 units. You review them in all of our advertisements. It's go watch Tom's video. Ask Tom about this.
Appreciate that. Yeah. But you know, so these are the little things, and it's why my reviews are almost like they're like 45 minutes long. And you know, to some people, they're like, you got to do this in shorter time because you know, I just want to know what's the best one to buy. And you can't, if you really want to review it, you got to get down into the nuts and bolts. So like, I mean, those are some of my problems. I think Electron could make this a very good unit. If they made the plastic a little bit thicker, a little bit stronger, if they put a new connector on it, those two things alone wouldn't cost them that much more. And it would be a pretty good unit. It's, you know, it's scored 86 on the charger rater, which we have listed up there. It could easily be in the 90s if they just made some small tweaks. Another problem that I have with it is they only offer a 1-year warranty as standard. And I never recommend units that are only a 1-year warranty. However, they will sell you an extended warranty, either a 2-year, 3-year, or a 1-year, 2-year, or 3-year extension. But here's the kicker. It's not through Electron. Electron partnered with another company that offers extended warranties. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how well that'll work. If I'm buying an extended warranty, I want to buy it through the company that's selling me the unit because I can call them and say, hey, I have your charger. The thing's broken. Fix this or give me a new one. When you're dealing with this third party, you know, and you say, oh, the connector's broken. The answer might be, well, did you abuse it? What'd you do with it? Did you drive over it? Because it's not covered if you drive. No, I didn't drive over it. It just broke. Well, you know, that could be an abuse, you know? So, but when you're dealing with the company, you can maybe give them the business and they're a little bit more worried that you'll go on social media and blast them and say, don't buy this. So, you know, those are some of the things. Offer a 3-year warranty, put a better connector on it, make the outer casing a little bit stronger. Like, and I show in my video, the Clipper Creek people were so proud of their casing. They beat it with a baseball bat for a while on video to show you how strong the Clipper Creek unit was. I'd break this with the first swing. So, you know, not that you should be hitting your chargers with baseball bats, but it just proves a point that, you know, there's different robustness. Yeah, and then we have the key features up there. The price is pretty good, $469. I know the list price is $499, but Electron sells it for $469. And I asked them, well, how long is this sale going on? Because I need to mention that in my comment. They're like, well, we don't have any intention of ending it. So it's one of those things where, and a lot of companies do this, I'm not knocking Electron, where they list the price and then it's always on sale. You know, NLX does this all the time with the juice box. They constantly run sales. So you think that you're, oh, I better buy it now because it's on sale. But meanwhile, it's always that price. And it's a decent unit, 20-foot cable. I like long, 20-foot's the minimum that I approve of. I would prefer if this is 23 to 25 feet. I even had some issues like when I backed my Lightning into the garage, it wouldn't reach the end of the, and that's in a standard garage. I know the Lightning's a big vehicle. I could have driven it straight in and then yes, it will reach, but I don't want to have to just, I don't want to have to pull my vehicle into the garage a specific way just so the cable reaches. It should reach every corner in my garage, in my opinion. So these are the things I nerd out on. And, you know, that's why I do what I do. It's not a terrible unit. I wouldn't say don't buy it. But I wish Electron would do a little bit of a better job. Another thing that now this picture up here reminds me of, I probably can't see it, but the plug isn't a one piece molded plug. And I'm going to try to let you see.
Yeah. I think you know what you're telling us. Okay.
You see the screws in the plug?
Oh.
Okay. So, I mean, this is all fine for safety certified plugs. You're allowed to do it. But when you get that, this is what you get. Let me see. Can you see that?
I think so. A little bit of.
Yeah. So when you have a, plug that's put together with screws, the where the cable goes into the plug itself is never sealed as well as when it's a one piece molded plug. This might be a little thing, right? You know, it might not ever have an issue, but if you mount your NEMA 1450 with the ground down, because this cable is very long, so so you could mount it with your 1450 ground up or ground down. You might have an existing NEMA 1450 that's installed ground down in your garage. So now your plug's plugged in here. So now anytime, any type of moisture or anything, you could spill your coffee when you're plugging in and plugging in, it's going to run down this cable and end up here. And it's going to work its way in there. And like I said, maybe it's a small thing, but over time, you get moisture in there. Maybe even condensation, you know, if the garage is cold and it's hot outside, condensation could form on the cable. You could have a problem with it. So, you know, those little things that most people won't pick up on. I was able to nitpick a lot of things about this. So going back to the original question about Tom, what do you think about the Vortex Tesla, the NACS to CCS adapter? I haven't looked at it yet. My inclination is that it's the first product that Electron has put out of that type of an adapter. So I wouldn't rush out to buy it yet. It might prove to be a really good adapter, but I've seen Electron, and as I said, I want to be clear about this. Some of Electron's products are really good, but I've seen them come out with their first generation of certain things. It seems like they rush to market to get something out there. And maybe it hasn't been engineered properly yet, but I'm not down on Electron. I like what they're doing. They want to be like one-stop shopping for charging equipment, adapters, circuit splitters, cable extensions, and some of their things are good. I wish they would not try to rush to some of their products to market and maybe get some outside like a Monroe, like somebody to look at their product and say, or even me for their charging equipment and say, look, these are the things you need to improve before you bring this to market, and then bring it to market, and then it will be rock solid.
I think this adapter you were talking about is probably, in a nutshell, highlights the sort of mess that you guys are going to be in for a period of time. I don't know how long that period is going to be, but as you know, over here, everything's CCS2. Tesla sell their cars with that on. The EU have said, right, we're behind it. And yeah, there's some CHAdeMO still floating around, but everything's the same, right? So, but again, there is so much this is the job that Tom does and educates people as consumer advice. Like, this is, it's great that they've got this on pre-sale, but I would want, like, in big red letters, you cannot use this product. Like, if you buy this today, or if it arrives on the 1st of January, it's a really expensive trinket, and it may work one day when Tesla decide to open up their network. It will work one day when Tesla make a call, but again, like, I would put, like, just if I were running that company for fear of getting sued, I'd put like a big disclaimer, you cannot use this yet. You can buy it and pre-sale it. And again, in a nutshell, it's the education. It's CCS1 to NACS. It's what you guys are going to go through for the next few years. And it's going to get messier, I think, before it gets any better as more people drive EVs.
Well, Martin, just at SEMA, I saw three other NACS to CCS adapters. So they're just flooding the market now. It's not just Lectron or A to Z. It's now all of them. And I even used another type of adapter yesterday. I'll make a video about it at some point. And it was just red hot after a 10-minute charging session. And I'm like, this is crazy. So adapter safety needs to be drilled into everyone. Just honestly, if you can avoid using an adapter, that's the best. If you have to use an adapter, just use the one you buy from Ford or from GM or from whoever. Like, why buy any of these third-party ones? None of it makes sense. Just buy the official one.
We'll be talking a lot about NACS adapters over the course of the next 6 months. Between now and then. So if you're really ever questioning that, just come here, and the four of us are going to be talking a lot about adapters. And one other thing I wanted to jump on really quickly before we move off, Simon asked this, what sort of loony puts their plug sockets down? You can't imagine how many people, Simon, have their NEMA 1450 with the ground down. And let me tell you something, some people have to, because some of the charging equipment comes with the plug coming from the bottom of the unit with it ground down, with a short stub where you couldn't even bend it over. So I have, if you see behind me, I have two NEMA 1450s on the wall here. I had to mount one ground up and one ground down just so I can review all the equipment, because coming out of the factory, some are ground up, some are ground down. So, you know, it's not that crazy of a question, because a lot of even electricians, when somebody, they're getting a Tesla, right? Because they're going to use the Tesla mobile connector. They tell their electrician, put in a NEMA 1450, and then they put it in the wrong way. They'll put it ground down, and you know, the Tesla needs it ground up, and they'll send me a picture of it. They'll be like, Tom, did they make the right adapter? I got the wrong adapter with this, because they're thinking they need to change the adapter, not the outlet. And I'm like, just call your electrician back and tell him this, to just flip it over. It's going to take him 5 minutes, and tell him he should have asked you first which way you wanted it. But they don't. If you ask an electrician to install a NEMA 1450, many of them, particularly the ones that aren't specializing in electric vehicle charging equipment, they'll just come in and put it anyway. If you don't do it. But the companies that do a lot of chargers will either put it ground up or ask you which orientation do you want this?
I think mine was installed upside down. It was a little bit, I don't like it, just because
it's common.
Just because it looks weird, you know. It's just like, why would you do that? But whatever. That's
well, they might have had a reason to. The equipment they were using might have required it to be ground down, because it goes both ways.
Right.
It shouldn't. The ground should be up, but there's no code on that, I don't think. But I know out in field in practicality, it's 50-50. Some are up, some are down.
Right. All right. So let's move on, I guess. So this week, Volkswagen revealed the ID.7 Tour. That's the station wagon version of the ID.7, or as posh folks like Martin says, an estate. So When I say they revealed it, I mean, that's pretty much all they did. Volkswagen released exactly two photographs and a short press release with basically its coefficient of drag, 0.24, which is 100th more than the liftback version, and that its boot can hold 545 liters or 19.24 cubic feet from the floor to the top of the headrest of the rear seat, which is how they do the cargo space measurement in Europe, which I just learned last week. I didn't realize we can't compare storage spaces in cars from Europe to the US. I think we do it to the ceiling in the US. I was seeing the same vehicle. I just double checked that last night. I was seeing like the same vehicle in Europe and US have different cargo numbers. But anyway, if you fold the rear seat down of the station wagon here, the Tour, it's 1,714 liters or 60.5 cubic feet of cargo space, which is even better than the Volkswagen ID4, especially with the seat down. It really opens up a lot more room for you in there than the ID4. Oh, and we learned that it will launch in Europe in 2024 and be built in Emden, Germany. And that's about it. You know, we don't really know much about it. So, Tom, you were at an ID7 sedan program this week and actually saw this thing with your own eyes. Could you learn anything about it? Or were they all like, we cannot talk about future product?
So, well, that's even if I did learn something about it, I couldn't talk about it because we're under embargo. But I mean, I think it looks awesome. It's definitely what I would prefer if I were to get an ID7. I would love this version. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, companies don't send station wagons to the U.S. You know, we just don't get them. So, you know, I doubt that this will ever make it to U.S. shores. But I think it looked awesome and did get a chance to look at it. We can look inside. As you can even see from that picture, the window's like blacked out. So I'm not even sure if the inside has anything or if it's like a shell, you know, because it's just, you know, to get it out there. But I think it looked really cool. I wish we'd get station wagons, but the U.S. market says they want SUVs. Like, well, if I want something with a lot of room, I want it to be, you know, 8 or 9 inches taller than this and fit even more stuff in the back, which they probably never even need more cargo space than what this can provide. But that's just the way it is, unfortunately.
Kyle, I guess you have to go out with people waiting for you in the car, waiting for you to get hit the road. Anything right. On the any one last word on the ID7 tour before you hit the door?
More wagons equals more better. Very pleased to see them doing this.
Right on. I agree. I mean, I really kind of wish we had the. I don't. Do you know a Volkswagen's product planner now? You used to, but you changed.
Oh, no, they have many of them, but yes, I know a few.
Okay. Well, we need to start some sort of wagon campaign.
They're already doing it internally. They're just boring. They won't do it.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's a bummer. I mean, they're trying to bring I think we just got to keep them on the track of bring that ID2 GTI to the U.S. Okay, let's skip this one. We can only get a couple fun Volkswagens a decade out of them. So let's just choose the right ones to push for.
Right on. Well, I'd like to thank Edgar. Edgar Bernier for his contribution there, a little gift for us in the comments, and I really appreciate that.
See you guys.
See you, Kyle.
Kyle, take care.
Have a good time. Right on. Uh-oh. We're Kyle-less. But I don't know. Yeah, Tom, real quick. We don't spend a whole lot of time on this. So Kyle already drove the ID7 at some point, and then had this program. Is this like a first drive program that you're on with?
Yeah, it is first drive program, which is weird because, as you said, they've given other people access to it in Europe. And this wasn't like specifically a U.S. First drive event. It was for Europe also. So there were Canadian teams there. There were North American U.S. teams there. There were European teams there. So, it's kind of like a two-stage thing because, I mean, Kyle already spent time in it and actually put out a really good video on that. But Jordan from Out of Spec came, and so the two of us kind of hung out together. We teamed up. Cool. We shot some videos together. So there'll be some ID7 videos on, that's the two of us hanging out on driveway. The drive was in South France, a beautiful area. It was really, which is what the manufacturers usually do. They put you in these really nice areas for good scenic pictures and views. So we can't talk about it. The embargo's for another 10 days or so. But I'll have a video. And one of the things that we did, and if you're on YouTube, you can see this video here that I don't think anybody else did, was Jordan and I found, we teamed up in the car. We found a DC fast charger and we went off course.
Nice.
And found a DC fast charger and charged it up for a while. And I even recorded a charging session. I can't really, again, talk about any of that stuff. But that'll all be in our video, and I think it's the only place where you're going to get that type of content. So I could be surprised. But the funny thing is, so when you do these first drive events, you come back to the hotel at the end of the night, you get keys in, and then typically you have dinner and you talk to the engineers. They have engineers available. So Jordan unpacks his stuff and leaves, and I had to do some more video inside the car. So then the Volkswagen handlers come and they take the key from you because they clean it and get it ready. They have to recharge it for the next day. And the one looks at the state of charge and he's like, because we had a very high state of charge now when we brought it back, and we'd been driving like 150 miles, you know, like all day long and everything. And it was like, you know, like 80% or something when we get back. So he looks at it and he's like, did you guys drive today? And I was like, yeah. He's like, you went the whole course? Did you take a shortcut? And I'm like, no, we actually went further. And he's looking at it and he's like, you guys have the record. He goes, you must be very efficient. I said, oh yeah, we've been driving EVs for a long time. We were hypermiling. We wanted to see how good we could, how good the efficiency of this car would be. And the two of them are looking at each other and shaking their heads, because I'm sure everybody brought it back at like under 20% state of charge. Cause we drove, you know, I think it was almost 200 miles or whatever. We brought it back at a high state. They're just looking at each other like, how did this happen? They're like, really? Like, you did the whole, you went to, you know, to the midway point and then to the lunch. And I'm like, yeah, we did all that. I go, we wanted to see how efficient it would be. So we drove really, really carefully. And as I walked away, I could hear them like talking in German to each other, like, how could this be? You know, yeah. We don't even have to charge this practically. You know, it was funny. But Jordan and I had a good time, and we're gonna put links to each other's videos. You know, when we eventually put those up. But other than that, I can't really talk about it. You know, look for those reviews in a short period.
ID7, I think, it's so funny. It took a while for them to mature the ID vehicles, and I understand the software criticism that was out there. But the newer ID vehicles, like the new Buzz, the upgraded Buzz that's coming, and the ID7 with the bigger screen. I forget the exact size, but with the bigger screen, ID7 comes with a bigger battery as well, 86 kilowatt hours. All these little improvements they're making, the vehicles feel more mature now. And again, you know, with the ID7 estate touring, or the tourer as they call it, with all of that space in the back, more storage than a Passat. That is the new Passat. My only regret, I said this on my podcast this week, and it's hindsight's a wonderful thing, is that the two ways of doing it, which is, we're going to make and there was obviously an e-Golf, but like, it's the e-Golf, it's the e-Passat, it's the e-Touran. I just kind of wish that VW had not done the ID series, because, and I get both sides of the argument. It just feels like they're still pushing water uphill a little bit when they've got these incredible nameplates like Polo, Golf, Passat, stuff that you've lived with for, you know, what is the Golf on now? Is it the Mark 8? The comment section will know. Is it Mark 7, Mark 8 Golf? And it's like, and there was an e-Golf, obviously. And it was a good car as well. And you think, man, oh man, like if I had my time again and I was running VW, I probably would have just tried to take these legendary names and make them electric. Because the ID7 looks great, but call this the electric Passat and it sells like hotcakes. And you can still restyle it and all that kind of stuff. So that was my only thoughts watching this. I'm like, this is a mature vehicle. It looks great. Absolutely want one. I feel like they've matured into it now. The software is going to be a different issue because we heard about the carryout issues this week as well from Manager Magazine in Germany, which is potential 2,000 layoffs there. You know, software
so
is still...
We didn't talk about it, but it's not in our thing. So I don't know if you want to take a 20 seconds to tell us about
it.
One thing I want to jump on real quick, because Martin said the software is going to be a problem. And this isn't coming from me because I can't comment.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
If you look at Kyle's video, Kyle did a deep dive video on the new ID. He was in ID 7, and it's a 15-inch screen. He displays all that, and he talks in depth about how quickly how responsive it is with the new software 4.0. Watch his video if you're concerned about the software. Before that the embargo's up, Kyle, I think, explains how impressed he was with how snappy the software was. And that video, there he is in the video with a Volkswagen rep. And, he seemed genuinely, happy with the improvement over the existing software. And ID4 is going to get this software too soon, in like a few months, I think. But you mentioned software issues, Martin, so I just wanted to point that out. Yeah, Kyle does a good explanation of it.
Go and watch this video because it does look so much better now.
Right. Yeah.
And that center display is as big as a display in like a Model 3 or Model Y, 15 inches.
Okay. Yeah. It has more bezel on the bottom there, it looks like.
Yeah, and it's the heater controls, I think, are illuminated now, and I still don't like them because there's nowhere to rest your palm, and you shouldn't have to change the heat with a silly slider, and the steering wheel's horrible. Just use the steering wheel from the Golf. It's the best steering wheel you made. That's silly decisions they made with the high gloss buttons and stuff, which I don't get on with. But
overall,
if that bottom row with some physical buttons, let's not try and fix what isn't broken. A few physical buttons, and I get all the reasons on cost savings and blah, 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 blah. But, and minimalism and all that, and copying Tesla. But still, a few buttons, a proper steering wheel, and this ID7 looks an absolute proper, Passat / whatever you want competitor. From VW. In terms of the software, it was the German report from Manager Magazine this week, which said that with the new head in charge, they've changed earlier this year. They changed the head of Carrier, their software division, and they said 2,000 people would leave VW software business over the next 2 years, or in 2024 and 2025. And what the article didn't make clear, and what I can't find out, and I don't know anybody in Volkswagen to ask, if Volkswagen want to clarify to us, that'd be amazing. Mm-hmm. Before Christmas, we were meant to see the Macan and the Q6 e-tron from Audi, both built on the new platform. They've both been moved back to sort of Easter time, March, April, with the news this week for this German report that the software 1.2 is going to be delayed again by 18 months. Do these two vehicles, the Macan and the Q6 e-tron, get delayed by 18 months? Because that would be a disaster. I can't even contemplate if that's the truth. It would be a disaster. These vehicles are, they've got to come out now. And so software 1.2, forget software 2.0, which is now like 27, 28. And we also saw the news this week from Google putting out the press release that they have signed on with Porsche to do Android Automotive. And if I was working in Volkswagen's software department, I'd be like, well, the Porsche brand have gone, we're out. We're going to go with Google. From what I read a fluffy press release, it looks like it's going to be a subset within the Porsche software. So I think there'll be the Porsche logos, the Porsche user interface, and then you somehow go into that. It won't be like the full-blown, full-fat, Volvo Polestar Android Auto experience, or Android Automotive, that others are doing as well. I just couldn't clarify so much stuff this week. But particularly is the Q6 and the Macan delayed because of these software issues. There was just no talk about it. So, I'd like to... if the comment section from anyone more in the know than I am can fill us in, would love to know.
Right on. Just want to mention real quick, Josiah Rocco just gave us a generous gift there as well. And I'd just like to thank you for that. Love this podcast, he says. Thank you, guys. Well,
thank you.
Because... Right, we're having to pay our own way since we've gone independent, and it's tricky. And we also have a super question. Edgar Bernier sends us $4.99 and asks, would it make more sense to have the plug-in electric vehicle pickup truck with 100-mile range, no less battery, no towing concerns, X Ford Lightning, 50 kilowatt, for example, Ford Lightning with a 50 kilowatt hour battery and a three-cylinder turbo engine. I think we might see some of that actually from Dodge. So I guess we're going to find out if it makes sense, right? Dodge is making their Rev, the 1500 Rev. I think it's going to have a range extended version. So like a plug-in electric hybrid version of that pickup truck. And I wouldn't be surprised if Ford has something like that coming out too. Just like a guess, I haven't heard any even rumors, but like I would not be surprised if I saw news of a plug-in hybrid Maverick, because they already make that in a hybrid form as well. So I got to think that, especially Stellantis companies and Ford, they have that plug-in hybrid frame of mind. GM has already said it's not doing plug-in hybrid. So
my take on that is it makes sense for some use cases. The problem with that is you still have the ice. You still have all the maintenance of the ice. It's like neither fish nor fowl plug-in hybrids. And yes, it will solve some people's issues, particularly people that live in really rural areas that have to travel very long distances where there isn't very good charging infrastructure. Yeah, it makes sense. But one of the beautiful things about electric vehicles is there's no maintenance, and especially for fleet managers. And you still have all that, mate. You still have to do the oil changes, the tune-ups. You still have, the mufflers that are going to rot off, and exhaust systems to maintain, and somebody
catalyst converter stolen.
Yeah, to be stolen. So that's the downside of that. And one of the things that, I think, until you've owned EVs and lived with them for a while, that you don't really appreciate is how easy they are to own as far as maintenance-wise. There's nothing you have to do. And you know, with the plug-in hybrid, you're still tethered to that maintenance schedule and putting money out, more complicated things breaking. And so that's my point of view on that. Yes, it would work and make sense for a lot of people, particularly where we are today with regards to infrastructure. But in a few years when infrastructure improves and we have, electricity, we have EV chargers more proliferated, I just don't see the use case for the plug-in hybrid that much, except for a very small, limited number of use cases where it will still apply. But for the average person, I'm not big on that concept.
Right on. Oh, real quick, thanks again to Dylan Womack for his contribution here, $4.99, and RWJR44.
Look at Gary over here.
Look at awesome. As well. Wow.
Wow. Thank you, Gary.
Man, this crazy super sticker action happening today. We really appreciate it.
I'm going
that,
out
y'all.
For dinner tonight.
I was going to say, Dom's going to go charge his Model 3 after this. He's like, yes, more road trips. Here we go.
Yeah.
Keep it coming, and I'll be dipping into the top shelf liquor tonight.
Uh-oh. Look out.
Oh, I wish.
All right, so let's move on from that. So 2 years ago at the General Motors From Automaker to Platform Innovator Investor Day event, President Mark Royce announced that that Chevrolet would launch the Equinox EV with a $30,000 price tag. It was almost exactly 2 years ago. This may be the least surprising news ever, but we learned this week that the cheapest Chevy Equinox EV, the 1LT, would actually have an MSRP of $34,995. Some quick math, that's $4,995 more than what we were kind of hoping it would be. So, of course, last week we learned that the Equinox EV is not coming out fall of 2023, so that's basically now. But rather sometime early in the new year. And when it does come out, the initial trim level will be the 2RS. That's the top trim, which starts at $48,995 in front-wheel drive. Or if you want it in rear-wheel drive, you can pay them $52,900 or $395. The one the One LT, the cheap one, comes out with some unspecified time later in 2024. So the only silver lining here is that the original estimated ranges have been revised upwards. So the One LT is now getting 300 EPA miles from up. That's up from 250 miles, which is a pretty big jump. And the 2RS is getting 319 miles of range, up from 300. So yeah, and that's the news on that. And but not to be that guy, but besides the rear-wheel drive Equinox EV, you know what else you can get for $52,000 and some change? Tesla Model Y Performance. Yeah,
you went there. You were that guy.
I'm sorry for being that guy, but man, it's like a couple hundred dollars difference in price. You could get a rear-wheel drive Equinox EV or an all-wheel drive Performance Model Y, the same size vehicle, basically. I think actually Equinox is 2 or 3 inches bigger, longer, and the Model Y is an inch wider. But this is a 3.5 second 0 to 60, so you got a crazy performance and not as much range, maybe. But yeah, I just think that's a weird sort of equation there. How much is an all-wheel drive version of the Equinox going to be?
Now, help me out here. I thought that the Model Y competitor that would cost 50, 60 grand was called we don't get the cars here. The Blazer, that the Equinox was replacing the Bolt for 30,000. We get neither car here. And I was really confused at the news this week. So how does this small car cost as much as a Model Y?
That is a great question. And
there we go.
If you go to like the Chevrolet website and look for answers, well, good luck with that, because I put this on Threads late last night. I don't know what is going on with Chevrolet right now and their website, but Blazer EV, they're shipping Blazer EVs to customers now, and I guess our MSRP is like $60,000, but there's not even like I don't think there's a build page here on the website.
And
it's like,
Dom, sorry to interrupt you, but did you see? I hate when I do that. I apologize. I do that a lot. Did you see? We had some people reach out to us on our Batteries Included email, and also I had some people personally reach out to me about they had deposits down for General Motors vehicles, EVs, and they can't get a refund. I've had three or four people reach out to me and say that. Now, I don't know if it's a temporary thing because there's an issue with the website or something, but they removed that section of it's still inexcusable. Remove that section of the website where you can ask for your deposit back. So we need to look into that. Maybe even reach out to GM because it just seems like it's a mess right now, as you were saying. But getting back to the Equinox, are we certain, and I could be wrong about this, I don't have the best memory, that GM was saying it was 30,000, like
around 30,000
before or after the if it qualifies for the federal tax.
That's the key
because a lot of other manufacturers have done this and they've said, we're going to be selling the car at this price, but that was with the tax credit baked in, which is wrong. But did they ever specify that this will be the MSRP or that you'll be able to get an Equinox for $30,000? I don't like when they bake those numbers in, but a lot of manufacturers do that. And if that is the case, then it's still a $30,000 or even less EV.
Yeah, and Tesla do it. They still they don't do it on the UK website. I thought it was interesting. The US website still does the effective cost of a Tesla, which is, come on, just tell me what the car costs.
So Nebulous 1701 is saying they said the MSRP would be around 30,000. I don't really remember that, and you could be right. I'm not saying they did or didn't. I was just throwing that question out there.
What amazes me, this was all part of the earnings call, which was, Tuesday or something? When they it was around Monday or Tuesday, beginning of the week, when they announced the specs and the ranges. And I remember doing a podcast for EV News Daily earlier this week and bringing up, which is now back on YouTube, by the way, dear viewers. I'm so bad at doing I've had so many attempts at doing the YouTube version, and I've never liked it. But anyway, the last week has been back on YouTube, and it's okay.
I was going to mention that.
I'd rather just do an audio version, but Kyle and Dom kept saying,
"No, it's great,
dude. Just turn even if you're just doing this and talking to the camera, do your daily podcast." And I was like, "Okay, fine."
Yeah, I mean, and people are responding in your comments. I've read a bunch of comments. I haven't looked at your numbers yet, but
But they said, I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Dom, because you've been a huge encouragement to me to say, look, just turn on the camera, do your daily podcast on YouTube, and it'll spread the word for the audio version. There's 2,000 episodes in the archive if anybody wants it. But I said on Monday or Tuesday, like, you know, when they said, it was either Mary Barra or someone said, hey, we're moving it back from spring, but we'll try and get the 1LT out this year for calendar year 25. And I'm like, whoa, someone in the, you know, in the website department at Chevrolet is really quickly trying to get rid of this, which says available spring 2024. Like someone's going to get a rocket email to be like, change the website. And here we are on Friday with
it's
just...
It wasn't this last night. I put this on, yeah.
And it's like, it still says available spring. There is zero chance this car is coming in the spring if you listen to what they said earlier in the week, which was, we'll try and get it out for 2025 model year, but the more expensive ones. And it's like, how big is this company? Like, I'm pretty sure they've got somebody in the website department that's like, Dave, can you just change that now? It's like, how many layers of management and processes do these big companies have to go through to get it right? Sorry, it just frustrates me when there's stuff like this, because this is real people, real customers, real people watching this podcast, spending their own hard-earned money, and I just want some of these car companies who know better to tell people what to expect, when to expect it. I don't think 30 or 35 grand is a big deal. We're going to see Cybertruck November 30th. That's going to be a $100,000 truck. If you want a tri-motor or a, you know, dual motor, let's make no bones about it. There's going to be, I think it'll be like 99. I think they'll try and get it under 100. There's no 40 grand Cybertruck, and I'm not angry about that. No 30 grand Equinox. I mean, they're going to keep the Bolt going with Ultium Tech. But to do like messy stuff, like, oh, we don't know when these cars are coming, and you can get a Blazer, but you can't build one, and like, oh, come on, just get it right. Come on.
So speaking of the Cybertruck and moving along, because we've just got a couple minutes left, I want to hit this before we get out. So that's launching in just a few weeks, the official delivery event, and there's a ton of details that we don't know about it. However, after an appearance on Joe Rogan's show, Tesla CEO Elon Musk revealed a couple of things, and actually Joe Rogan revealed something as well. Like, if you're driving through a Sherwood Forest in the 1500s, don't have to worry about being shot by arrows, because they'll explode when you shoot the Cybertruck with them. That's just a little thing going around. I guess that's something he did. I didn't see the actual footage of it, but...
I did watch.
I'm sorry.
Joe Rogan is not necessarily my cup of tea, but as we talk about EVs all the time, I thought, well, the head of the biggest EV maker in the world is on a podcast. I should watch that. And there was very little Tesla talk. There was a lot of putting the world to rights and these crazy liberals out there, but it got very political and, you know, pandemic-y stuff. But the first bit was about the cars, and so if you want to watch it, go watch the first bit, and that's all the Tesla stuff, really.
So basically, he said the Cybertruck will weigh about 6,000 to 7,000 pounds, depending on the configuration, and there's some version of it's going to have what they're calling beast mode, which... Musk says they're aiming for a sub 3 seconds 0 to 60. I think it's kind of late in the game to still have performance aims out there. Like, it's like a few weeks from, you don't have that dialed in yet. I don't know. But Tom, how are you even excited about the Cybertruck at this point?
Yeah, I'm kind of over it. I can't wait to drive one just to see what it's like, but it's just dragged on so long. I have, like, you know, I'm just tired of it. Like, bring the vehicle out. Let us check it out. But all this crazy stuff, like shooting arrows at it and everything. But I will say, the one thing that I would love to do, if I could get a hold of an early Cybertruck somehow, I want to record me throwing steel balls at the windows. Because I want to see if they've improved that. I think that video would just, like, it would more than pay to replace the glass in it, you know. So sure, if I get an early version Cybertruck somehow, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a big heavy metal ball. I may even get the ball ahead of time so it's ready and throw it at the windows to see if they fix that. So,
okay.
I mean, there was
that's my test.
We look forward to seeing it. There is this weird obsession with trying to damage the vehicle. Like, I know we got to go. So this is my final point on Cybertruck, which I've not said out loud yet. So I'll try and synthesize my thoughts into my mouth in 30 seconds. Is Elon Musk and Tesla stuck in the past, because throwing a ball at the window, rah, 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 you can make it bulletproof. Like Joe Rogan got his bow and arrow and shot a bow at it, and it, you know, it was fine. And Elon still talked on the Joe Rogan show about, oh, you can put bulletproof glass on it. And it seems like in the last 4 years, the world has moved on, and I'm kind of over that, because we've got the Ford F-150, we've got the Rivians, and we've got all the great trucks out there that we have a proper conversation about EV trucks. And they just keep coming back to this, look how much punishment we can give it. And I don't know, he's so busy running social media and stuff, if he can still read the room as well as he did, because I thought he was always so good at reading the zeitgeist, reading culture, reflecting it back sometimes, amplifying it. And I don't know whether he is just so busy or so in his bubble that he's not reading the room right, but I'm just so over. Like, who cares if you shoot it with a bow and arrow? Can it drive? You say it's an off-road vehicle. Can it drive up a hill? Like, we haven't seen it do any off-roading. Jalopnik did post a video this week of it going up a dirt hill with all its tires spinning, and it couldn't really do it.
Right.
But
it's a little tricky place, actually, that little hill. There's footage of Rivian doing it.
Yeah,
this.
I mean, look, come on.
But looking at that video, we don't know if it has front lockers, if they're engaged. We don't know what's going on. It's really hard to say it can't go up a hill if we don't know the whole situation behind it. So it did look damning, I would say. Mm. It didn't look like it wasn't performing as you'd hope it would off-road, because it was a very light course as well. Not that challenging.
Have we got to say goodbye? We got to say goodbye to Tom to go get a delivery.
Okay.
And the two of us wrap up.
Someone's been rapidly ringing my doorbell for the last few minutes, and they won't leave, so they must really want to see me.
Okay, well, we're dropping like flies today, but Tom and I can finish off.
Yeah, one more thing I want to talk about.
Yeah, quick, carry on, carry on. See you, Tom.
We'll see you next week.
It doesn't seem like they're leaving, so maybe I can stay for another minute.
Okay.
usually people would give up by now, but this person just keeps ringing my bell. So.
Okay, well. I just want to mention this one thing because it's kind of cool. So VinFast has faced its issues with the launch of its first model in the US, the VF8. It's gotten terrible reviews. It's not exactly selling like hot cakes, of course. But the company is spending billions of dollars on a new factory, and they have now decided to move to a hybrid retail sales model that involves dealers. So they signed up 27 of them so far, and they have shown them the VF3 to them, and these dealers are like eager to have the automaker sell it here. So the VF3, if you need to scroll up just a bit more there, Martin, the VF3, they've developed this vehicle for Vietnam market actually, but it's kind of like cute as a button. Like, I showed this to Kyle, and I was trying to tell him about, oh, VinFast has this thing, and he was like, no, I didn't want to see it. But then when he saw it, it's like, oh, actually, this is pretty cool. It's like 16-inch wheels. It's 10.5 feet long. It's kind of tiny. They want to sell it for around $20,000 US before the incentives. So I think it could be this car, if they build it robustly enough and it's, you know, good enough, that's, you know, some ifs there. But they're looking at Vietnam and other emerging markets like India. The plant VinFast is going to India. It's a huge market, and this would be an incredible vehicle for that market, I think. Tough, but a lot better looking than a lot of the traditional Indian designs. But that's all I have to say about that.
I don't know how they get it under $20,000 in passing U.S. you know, safety and crash test standards.
Sure.
Like, that's
true.
If this comes to market and it's safe and it's, you know, 18,995, that it will sell because it's just that price point. It's like, you remember the Hyundai Accents in the mid 80s that were like $29,999. Everyone knew they were junk, but people could afford them, so, you know, they bought them, and you know, so that'd be cool.
Right. So we have to go now, but we are getting lots of little donations. And here's one quick question from Mark Scheller. When I did the Blazer EV reservation, it said RS rear-wheel drive, but when it came time to order, they only offered E all-wheel drive for $60,125. Shame.
It's been a mess.
And Mark, it's really been a mess. $5. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, guys. We really appreciate all these, you know, all this money that you're giving us. This is fantastic. As we said earlier, you know, we took a big hit moving out and doing this on our own, whereas we used to get paid to do it. And now it's like, we're like, we've got expenses. This is costing us money to do, but we knew it was the right decision. And eventually it should turn out to be something good for all of us, but we super appreciate that you guys are doing this. And, we love our followers. You guys are the reasons why we continue doing this. And, thanks for everything.
Right on. And yeah, so I guess that brings us to the end of our show. Tom has to answer his door. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. It's been a great show having you all here. The comments and the donations, just top notch. Thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you all again very soon. Ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.